Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. Hi, Karen.
Hey, Michael.
What story do you have today?
Today's story is from Steve Russell.
It was the Christmas holiday season of 74. My buddy Mark and I took a shortcut through the patch of Australian pines that butted up to the south side of the National Enquirer headquarters in Lantana, Florida. And National Enquirer had started raising a Christmas tree up next to the railroad tracks for to celebrate, and they would light up the tree and invite celebrities to perform. So we walked through the woods, and we always thought that the woods right there next to the Enquirer always housed like the aliens and the covert people that gave them their weird stories. So we didn't think nothing about just them having their own little miniature forest. And the main attraction was a 5-story Christmas tree brought by train directly from Canada. The train would stop with the tree close to the proposed celebration site, so the crew would roll it off and erect it right there. Burl Ives was going to be there. He was going to sing a couple of holiday songs for the gathered locals that were scattered on the railroad tracks and federal highway. And at one time, Burl was a freight train riding man himself, a singing traveler. He ended up getting the attention of record producers and movie makers in Hollywood. And I didn't know who he was at the time, except for that he did the voice on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you know, typical 13-year-old. But I looked him up, and he had 26 hit singles, 39 movies. He beat out Charlton Heston in 59 as Best Supporting Actor in Big Country, 23 books, 13 Broadway productions. Burl actually had a closeness to freight train riding. He would ride to different performances, folk singing-wise, with Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie. But we made our way up to the tree and the stage area in time to see Burl being helped up through the loose and deep sugar sand. And all four of us crossing paths at the bottom of the steps leading to the makeshift plywood stage. We watched him being assisted going up to the stage, walking through the dunes of that white sugar sand by the railroad tracks. And we just thought, you know, because he was older and 350 pounds, they wanted to make sure he didn't fall down and hurt himself. We watched him climbing up the stairs, and they disengaged from him as if they were letting something loose into space. And Mark and I stood at the bottom looking up at as Burl made his awkward ascent. I looked off at the crowd at the wrong time as I saw them react as if something bad was happening. Little did I know, they were watching Mr. Ives lose his balance in slow motion. It was too late for me to return my eyes to the stage as Burl came crashing down on us, took us out like he was cleaning up a human 7-10 split. We were fortunate to be in loose sand, so he sat up, and I sat up, and I was underneath of him, and we were face to face, and he smiled real big, and he said, "Thank you, boys." And his breath just, it took away my breath. Found out that he was snockered. He had been drinking heavily, and that's why they were helping him up the stage. But to this day, people say that I sound like Burl Ives, so I don't know if that aerial alcohol infusion had affected my young and impressionable vocal cords, but I would like to think that I had saved his life from getting his neck broken. Just a year later, I'd end up visiting that same spot, laying in the sand. Me and my buddy we would go and ride along Lake Worth Beach, looking at the other kids that were hanging out, and they didn't know us, so that made us the ultimate outcast, you know, and the ultimate cool kids. But I felt sorry for the cars that my friend would drive, and his mother would buy cars off the car lot, and he thought he was Steve McQueen of Palm Beach County. And even an automatic, he would drop it down into second and punch the gas whenever he was passing somebody. The car finally broke down one night in Boynton Beach on Federal Highway about 11 p.m., and we started walking back up Federal Highway to make it back home, and we saw a freight train on the railroad tracks just to our left. So we went over and checked it out. It wasn't moving, and as we walked away from it, it jerked to life going in the direction that we were headed. So we looked at each other and decided to jump on one of the lips of the freight cars, and before we knew it, we were going in the right direction. I felt a little bit like a criminal. I was looking around all the time like I was a fugitive or something. But I got the feel of how Burl must have felt when he was riding the rails and going to different singing gigs with Woody Guthrie and everything, and thought it was pretty cool. But we didn't realize that the cars must have been empty because it was picking up speed fast. We passed High Paluxo Road on Lantana, and I knew that once we hit Lake Worth, there was nothing but quartz and broken glass to jump off it to, and the last of the sand along the railroad tracks was in Lantana. So right at the last curve, we jumped off into the sand and tumbled for about 15 feet, and right at the same spot where we had been mashed by Burl Ives. I had shared this story with some friends in a 35,000-member Facebook group called Palm Beach is Remembered. And it was just such wonderful validation of my memories to have people commenting, saying that they were there, and they saw him drinking shots, and they said that he was snockered when they dropped him off by helicopter to the Babe Ruth baseball field right behind the National Enquirer.
Steve Russell with a story about an experience growing up in Lantana.
What a blast from the past. When was the last time you heard the name Burl Ives?
I don't think I know anybody who's ever seen Burl Ives except on TV.
And when was the last time you thought about that Christmas tree that the Enquirer lit in Lantana? Have you ever seen that?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard stories about the Enquirer, which, as you know, was a... what kind of magazine do they call those things?
A tabloid.
A tabloid.
Still around.
Infamous.
Still around. And I love the juxtaposition, I always did, of the Enquirer with its yellow journalism and the Christmas tree, which they were known for, this humongous Christmas tree spreading peace and light. And here was Burl Ives, known for Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the epitome of Christmas carols, Christmas songs.
One of the most famous folk singers.
And here was a child coming into contact with him. Talk about running into Burl Ives or having Burl Ives run into you.
Smelling Burl Ives' breath. How close can you be?
That was one of the wonderful turns of phrase that he used when he was talking about the possible aerial alcohol infusion that he got from that, because he has been told that his voice sounds like that of Burl Ives.
I almost thought Steve was a journalist by the way his descriptions were.
He has beautiful, beautiful language. Even from his sensory description of the loose and deep sugar sand, along with the human 7-10 split, which of course is a reference to bowling, and snookered, I always love that word. But I want to get back to the loose and deep sugar sand. He was foreshadowing something there, I think, because people do lose their balance when they're around sand. And he, even though he was being held, it's possible that he didn't get good footing in the sand before he started climbing. Knowing where the story was going, when I heard that line, I thought, aha, he has planted that there so that there's a little seed in our head. What's going to happen? And that's really good storytelling.
Burl apparently fell downstairs to the stage. Is that what happened?
He fell down. He was going up, and he fell right down onto the children, the teenage boys.
It's a good thing he was snockered, because he didn't seem that affected by the fall.
No, although chances are it had happened to him once or twice before at 350 pounds and somebody who liked to drink.
I enjoy the story because Burl Ives is a part of folk music history. There was always some sort of rivalry between Burl and Pete Seeger because of the House Un-American Activities Committee and Earl continued success through the whole communist scare while Pete Seeger was blacklisted.
When he said that Burl Ives rode the freight trains, it made me think, of course, of Woody Guthrie, that really this is a kind of a direct connection. I mean, skin to skin connection or breath to breath that Steve has with that history. And I think that's a lovely thing.
There's an iconic photo of Woody Guthrie and Burl Ives. Burl is reading a newspaper called Hobo News. They were young men. This was back in the 40s. It's an important part of folk music history. It's interesting how Steve ended the story transporting himself a year into the future in that spot.
Yeah, that's a beautiful example of closure. he brought it back to Burl Ives in a really nice way. Not only was it at that spot by the train tracks, also because Ives had been riding the rails himself, that kind of closure really makes us feel that a story has taken us on a journey and then we've come home again. And the juxtaposition of Burl Ives and Facebook in the same story show how times change. We start off with somebody who was of the Depression generation, and then we end up with a person who's in the Facebook generation sharing that story with other people. It just shows a beautiful continuity.
Well, thanks for bringing that story in, Karen. If our listeners have a South Florida story they would like to share, how can they get in touch with you?
Send me an email to cneal@fau.edu.
Our website also has contact information as well as archive stories at wlrn.org. Click Radio and the Public Storyteller. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Michael. I'll see you next week.
Dr. Karen Neal is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. My name is Michael Stock. The Public Storyteller returns next Sunday.